This is VOA News. I'm Marissa Melton. The leaders of Britain, France, and Germany have issued a statement expressing grave concern over Iran's stated intention to withdraw farther from the 2015 International Nuclear Agreement. Iran was reacting to the U.S. killing of its general, Qassem Soleimani. AP's Zaria Shackley reports.
This statement by French President Emmanuel Macron, German Chancellor Angela Merkel, and British Prime Minister Boris Johnson, which comes after the U.S. killing of top Iranian General Qassem Soleimani last week, called for de-escalation of tensions and all parties to exercise utmost restraint and responsibility. The statement also called on Iran to refrain from further violent action or proliferation and urged the country to reverse all measures inconsistent with the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the 2015 Iranian nuclear deal. I'm Zaria Shakili.
Meanwhile, Iraq's parliament has passed a resolution calling for foreign troops to leave the country. Henry Rome, an Iran expert with the Eurasia Group, says if U.S. troops leave Iraq, it would open the door to the Islamic State militant group.
They're certainly not as strong, the Islamic State, as they were 5-6 years ago. But when or if a group like ISIS tries to make a comeback, the absence of U.S. forces, I think, would leave Iraq very vulnerable.
Meanwhile, U.S. Defense Secretary Mark Esper said Monday that, contrary to rumor, the United States is not withdrawing troops from Iraq. Esper said a letter from a senior military officer that's been circulating on Twitter Monday, which appeared to suggest withdrawal was only a draft and its release had been a mistake. There's no decision to leave, he said, nor did we issue any plans to leave. You can find more on this and other stories online at our website, voanews.com. From Washington, D.C., you're listening to VOA News. Former White House National Security Advisor John Bolton says he's prepared to testify at the impeachment trial of U.S. President Donald Trump if the Senate issues a subpoena. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Meghani reports from the White House.
Bolton's testimony would give a highly anticipated firsthand account from a top advisor who was in the room for moments others have already described, and it's unclear whether that would help the president or hurt him. Senate GOP Chief Mitch McConnell wants a fast trial and has resisted calling new witnesses. The Democrats want to hear from Bolton and others who did not appear during the House inquiry. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has not yet sent the articles of impeachment to the Senate while pushing for that testimony. If she does in the coming days, the Senate trial could start as soon as this week. Sagar Meghani at the White House.
Three Americans were killed by Somalia's al-Shabaab militant group during an attack on Sunday in a military base in Kenya. Reuters' Sarah Charlton reports.
Pictures released by militant group Al-Shabaab Sunday claim to show the aftermath of an attack in Kenya, which killed three Americans. One U.S. military service member and two contractors were killed in Sunday's attack on a military base close to the Somali border. Several others were wounded, and the Kenyan military said a number of militants were dead. Now the attack presents another crisis for Washington. The Pentagon is grappling with a rapidly escalating standoff with Iran following a U.S. drone strike in Baghdad that killed Iran's top military commander.
That's Sarah Charleston reporting. Sunday in Venezuela, the socialist lawmaker Luis Parra was installed as chief of the legislature after Congress was seized and the opposition leader blocked from entering. The swearing-in has been called a parliamentary coup and condemned by dozens of governments around the world. Libby Hogan has more.
On Sunday, Venezuela's ruling socialists seized Congress and handed the leadership to their own lawmaker, Luis Parra. The move is a gambit to cement President Nicolas Maduro's hold on power and sidelines the man who staked a rival claim to the presidency, Juan Guaido. Guaido served as opposition leader, but this move takes away the job that lets him challenge Maduro. On Sunday, Guaido was blocked from entering the building. Troops stopped him with riot shields and force. Guaido is recognized by more than 50 countries as Venezuela's legitimate leader. While Maduro is widely unpopular, but has clung to power with military support.
That's Reuters' Libby Hogan reporting. Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison says he will pay whatever it takes to help victims of devastating bushfires in the country, which have burned millions of hectares across three states. The death toll has now risen to 25. An estimated 2,000 homes have been destroyed. Marissa Melton, VOA News.
We'll be right back. Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, January 7th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Ugandan police arrest the opposition politician Bobi Wine.
It is unfortunate that the Uganda police, which is supposed to be the custodians of the law, have actually turned into lawbreakers. I have complied with every bit of the law, but they just ignore the law.
That's Ugandan opposition politician Bobi Wine. Zimbabwe authorities grant bail to Vice President Chiwenga's wife, charged with allegedly attempting to kill her husband. Swazi authorities detained the leader of the National Association of Teachers. Anti-government protests turned violent in Guinea on Monday. And Liberian police used tear gas and water cannons to disperse anti-government protesters.
So we don't know what will happen. So this is the reason why we sent for the water cannon to call up the fire. And when the water cannon called up the fire, they got annoyed and started to storm the police. This is how they attacked the police.
Patrick Sudu is the Inspector General of the Liberian National Police, and trafficking in northern Niger has come under increased scrutiny. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Rabo Chakulain, a Ugandan parliamentarian, also known as Bobi Wine, says he plans to meet with his supporters today, Tuesday, to begin his campaign ahead of next year's general election. The police detained Wine, together with some members of his People Power Movement, on Monday. The police also used tear gas to disperse his supporters after he was accused of holding consultations with his supporters in public instead of in an enclosed space. Local media quoted police spokesperson Fred Enanga as saying, "We are looking at charges of holding an unlawful assembly and disobedience of lawful orders." But Wine and his supporters have denied the accusations. Bobi Wine tells viewers Peter Clotty that members of the People Power Movement will not be deterred in their plans to challenge and wrestle power from President Museveni.
I don't know, honestly, because I just left my home and I was heading to the consultation for my presidential bid. I got blocked by the police, got brutally arrested. Many people were beaten. The police threw tear gas in a house where there was a baby and the baby died. They got me arrested with other members of parliament and other leaders. And they brought us to the infamous Nagarama police. And that's where we are. Right now, it is coming to 10 p.m. in the night. And they're informing us that they're releasing us with no charge. However, they've taken my property from me. They took away my jacket, my phone, and they are refusing to give me back my property. So I'm telling them I'm not living here without my properties, because it is within the law for me to have my properties if they're releasing me.
You have a planned consultation on Tuesday. Does that mean this will go on? Because some of the police are saying that you should not be holding consultations in the open, but you should be in an enclosed space.
Unfortunately, the police are playing politics on behalf of President Museveni, because I complied with all requirements of the law. They wrote back to us and said it should be an enclosed place, and we hired the hotels. But the police is attacking every venue owner that we hired the venue from, telling them that they should not host us.
So what are you going to do about your consultations? Because you've been cleared by the Electoral Commission and you have declared your intention to run for the office to challenge President Museveni. What's next for you?
It is unfortunate that the Uganda police, which is supposed to be the custodians of the law, have actually turned into lawbreakers. The police in Uganda today is the chief lawbreaker. I have complied with every bit of the law, but they just ignore the law. They just go on with illegality. However, myself, other leaders, and the people of Uganda are resolved to keep fighting for our rights legally. So we are proceeding with our presidential consultations because it is within the law and we have complied with every law of the land.
Some people are expressing concern that you could be putting yourself in danger because of what happened on Monday when you were arrested. Somebody died, as you described. So what steps will your campaign or yourself take in order to prevent possible clashes with the police or having this consultation turn violent?
Well, I know it's dangerous, but I mean, you know that under every dictatorship, standing up for your rights is dangerous. In Uganda today, standing up against President Museveni's dictatorship is very dangerous. People get killed, people get abducted, people get maimed. But we know that the law is on our side. If our truth is on our side and if God is on our side, we shall certainly win.
That was Ugandan parliamentarian Robert Chakulayi, also known as Bobi Wine. He was speaking with viewers Peter Clotty from the capital, Kampala. Zimbabwe authorities granted a $10,000 bill on Monday to the wife of Vice President Constantino Chiwenga. Mary Mumbewa had been charged of allegedly attempting to kill her husband while he was hospitalized in South Africa last July. She has denied the allegations. The court ordered her to surrender her diplomatic passport and title deeds. Mumbewa was also granted a 50,000 Zimbabwe dollars bill on charges of money laundering. Rejoice Mungwenya is a Zimbabwe political analyst. He says the Zimbabwe Anti-Corruption Commission should not be used to fight a family feud.
In the first place, it's very important for our listeners, James, to understand that the Zimbabwe Anti-Corruption Commission must not be used to fight a family feud. It's very unacceptable in a constitutional democracy. And of course, she has already made it very clear that there are many circumstances where she was alone with her husband when she never attempted to kill her husband. So as far as Zimbabweans are concerned, it's a totally frivolous and far-fetched accusation. It's a good thing that she's been given bail because there seems to be a bit of a political intonation in the charge.
Rejoice, what do you mean that the Zimbabwe Anti-Corruption Commission should not be used to settle family feuds?
Well, then if you try and compute and calibrate the number of accusations that have been made on ZANU-PF officials, several scores of them that range from $1 million to $3 billion of command agriculture, not a single person was arrested for that charge. Secondly, an accusation like that, which is unsubstantiated, a person deserves to have bail, and she's been incarcerated well before Christmas. And of course, Zimbabweans will argue that it's political because the vice president is not interested in the lady anymore. So he's simply using the judiciary to intimidate her and abuse the system.
Mrs. Mumbewa is also charged with allegations of money laundering.
In terms of Zimbabwean law, of course, we are told that it is illegal to take money out of the country if it's not to do with a letter of credit. We understand that. But what Zimbabweans are asking the question, how is it that Mary Mumbewa Chiwenga had access to $1 million, a mere supermodel? What happens to other accusations of other first ladies, people like Grace Mugabe, who got away with that sort of charge, and hundreds of other ZANU-PF people? So it's not really the issue of her, you know, having externalized. Is the issue of how she had access to that money. That is where the discussion is.
What happens to her now that she has been granted bail? Is she allowed to leave the country?
Of course not. She's not going to be allowed to leave the country, naturally, because remember, it was very difficult to get this bail in the first place. Her diplomatic passport, remember, she's a second lady, has been withdrawn from her. And I assume that there's been a huge premium that has been placed on her property. She doesn't have property, but I think her father is the one who outlaid his title deed. So she's definitely not going to be allowed to leave the country, having lost her diplomatic passport. And I'm sure that by the time she gets her passport again, I don't think she's going to get it back again.
Rejoice Mungwenya is a Zimbabwe political analyst. He was speaking with us from the capital, Harare. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today is Tuesday, January 7th. Daybreak Africa time, 14 minutes past the hour. Swaziland authorities on Monday detained the leader of the National Association of Teachers, also known as SNAT, on his return from a visit to South Africa. SNAT Secretary General Sikelela Dlamini says police detained their leader at the border with South Africa after he was accused of not removing his cap in front of the photo of King Mswati III. Local media reports say it is customary for Swazi citizens to remove their head covers in the presence of the king as a sign of respect. But SNAT Secretary General Dlamini tells viewers Peter Clotty that the labeling of the group as being supportive of pro-democracy organizations appears to be an attempt by the government to undermine the teachers' organization.
Our president, as he was coming home from an external assignment from South Africa, He was denied entry and detained at the border for the simple reason that he was wearing a hat. And the main reason, other than for identification purposes, those immigration officers, they were saying he was not going to be allowed inside Swaziland because there was the picture of the king mounted on one of those immigration offices.
But isn't it a requirement for all citizens of Eswatini not to wear cap, you know, in the presence of the king or his picture? Isn't it a requirement in the kingdom?
No, it is not a requirement. In the presence of the king himself, you cannot put anything on your head if you are a male. But where there is a picture, you are free to do anything. For example, in hotels, in restaurants, in offices, you can wear your cap. And particularly because those people who are residing in Swaziland is not only the Swazis. They are our friends and relatives from other countries who are tourists. So you cannot then treat them in that way because there is absolutely nothing in a picture that you can respect other than the person or the human being himself, which in this case is the king. And our traditions, they clearly spell out that you need to respect the authorities, including the king, and you cannot have your hat on in front of the king.
But Sikalela, why wouldn't he just remove his cap so he will be allowed to come into the country without much of a fuss? Because some people are saying that because he's a pro-democracy activist, he just wants to create the attention just to make the king and, for that matter, the government look bad.
It was the manner of approach. You see, the police officers, when they talk to union leaders, they talk to them to us with those harsh tones. And that is why you will recall, if you were following myself, the Secretary General, there was a search warrant that was issued against me when we were going up to the Christmas holidays. So there is that kind of treatment to us as SNAT or as teachers leaders, particularly because our union is the most feared. I'm trying to say the manner of approach actually by the police is actually the very same approach that actually caused the whole fracas.
Sikelela Dlamini is the Secretary General of the Swaziland National Association of Teachers. You're speaking with viewers Peter Clotty from the capital, Mbabane. Liberian security forces on Monday used force to disperse anti-government protesters who had assembled at the seat of the government to demand action from President George Weah on their proposal calling for major reforms in his government. The protest, organized by the Council of Patriots, a civil society group, brought together tens of thousands of Liberians. Moses Gazier will report from Monrovia.
It was all rosy throughout the morning and afternoon hours of Monday as protesters played loud music, carried placards, and chanted anti-President Weah slogans. Among them, women, men, and the youth in their vast majority, some of whom had been supporters of President Weah in the past. Inspector General of Police Patrick Sulu says negotiations with protesters to put out the fire delayed and that in deadlock, and there was only one measure to use.
We went to them to talk to them. In fact, they barricaded the whole fire. They said nobody will do anything. And what will happen tonight, we will see. So we don't know what will happen. So definitely we chose to call up the fire. This is the reason why we sent for the water cannon to call up the fire. And when the water cannon called up the fire, they got annoyed and started to storm the police. This is how they attacked the police.
Police fired tear gas and water cannons to dislodge the hundreds of protesters. Henry Costa of the Council of Patriots says several protesters were wounded during the police crackdown.
Because they realized that the people were determined to stay out there in a continued peaceable manner, that is when they decided to use tear gas and water cannons against unarmed, innocent, peaceful civilians, arresting five of our people, including my own sister, and wounding several of our people in the process.
Local human rights monitors who observed the protests frowned on the police use of weapons against the protesters. Adama Dempster is a human rights campaigner who worked alongside the Independent National Human Rights Commission in observing the protest.
The protesters have come peaceful. They sang their song, they chant as usual, beating their drums and then jet in the perimeter. We didn't see anything, you know, provocative from the protesters, except that aspect of cooking on the assembly ground.
The police said they seized three vehicles used by the protesters and made several arrests. The police said they searched the vehicles and discovered two firearms in two of the vehicles, which they say are allegedly owned by Representative Yake Koluba. The council of Petra has strongly defended Representative Koluba and demanded an apology from the police chief for making what they called unfounded allegations.
They claim that they found weapons, firearms, in Honorable Koluba's vehicle. We want to state categorically, at no time did Honorable Yeke Koluba have any weapons in any of those two vehicles. We are calling on the Liberia National Police through the Ministry of Justice to, with immediate effect, issue an open apology to Honorable Yeke Koluba for illegally searching his vehicle without his prior consent and without a court order.
Most businesses and government offices were closed during the protest on Monday. The protesters have applied increasing pressure on President Weah's government to provide better governance for the population. Moses Gazo, VOA News, Monrovia.
Thousands of people took to the streets on Monday in neighboring Guinea for yet another protest against what opposition politicians say is an attempt by President Alpha Condé to seek a third term. The president called for a constitutional referendum last month, which his critics say he will use to seek another term. The protests reportedly turned violent in President Condé's stronghold of Kankan when the president's supporters allegedly attacked the protesters. Sidi Ature is the leader of the Opposition Union of Republican Forces Party of Guinea.
This is a new year. This is 2020. And this is the year of end of second term of Alpha Condé. So we start a march today and we say clearly that what will be the last peaceful march we will held in Guinea. After that, you know, we'll have a new strategy because this guy don't want to change his mind about his third mandate.
When you say that will be the last peaceful march, what does that mean?
What we used to do is to start from point A to go to point B. And that is the administration that indicates where we are going. Next time, we will not accept that. We will protest everywhere in the city and everywhere in the country. We are not going to ask them to give us where we can go. We will start our march ourselves and we'll go where we want to go.
Don't you need permit from the government to protest wherever you want to protest?
We don't need permit. In the Guinean law, you just have to say them that we are going to protest that day. And what they can say is, okay, people are working or doing something there, so you have to change the place you are going.
There were protests in other parts of the country. We understand there was some violence in President Condé's stronghold of Kankan. What can you tell us?
Alpha Condé, you know, last time it was my office of my party, and this time it was Selu's party's office. But they burned tree or something, I don't know, market there. Alpha want to really create problem in the country because he don't know how to go forward in his plan to his third mandate, and I think he want to start some trouble in the whole country. This was people coming from his part. We went to others to burn their house, to burn their shops. I don't know, it's absolutely dangerous.
The protest was about whether a constitutional referendum for a possible third term. At the same time, there are elections that have been planned for February 16. Are you all taking part in the election?
No, we are not taking part of the election because of the electoral list is absolutely not fair. You know, we have last time 6 million people on this electoral list. We have audit about the list. We all together, you know, administration, Alpha Condé's party and the opposition. And that showed to us 1.5 million people inside this electoral list was not supposed to be there. And they want to take them out and they put 2 million plus Now we have not 6 million, but we have maybe 8 million people who don't know where they're coming. So we will not accept this electoral list. So we say if we don't sit down and, to work all together as we did it in 2010 to have a real electoral list, we will not accept the election.
Sidi Ature is the leader of the Opposition Union of Republican Forces Party of Guinea. He was speaking with us from the capital, Conakry. Trafficking in northern Niger has come under increased scrutiny in recent years because of fears that it is fueling violence in the Sahel region. While that may be true to a degree in certain parts, says Hannah Armstrong, Sahel expert at the International Crisis Group, it is more nuanced than that. In some areas of northern Niger, what gets called trafficking is in fact different forms of illicit commerce that allow remote communities to survive and can play a stabilizing role, she says. Armstrong spoke to Ricky Stryak about her new report out for the International Crisis Group, in which she looks at three types of trafficking: gold, migrant, and drugs.
Nigerians have a much more nuanced view of the role that informal and illicit economies play in politics and the economy of remote zones in Niger. Sometimes foreign partners now are coming in, you know, full of energy, kind of combat criminality and fight against illicit flows, you know, thinking that these are economies that are benefiting jihadis and these are economies that are benefiting armed groups. And the reality is you have a lot of very remote, vulnerable communities whose livelihoods depend upon informal and illicit economies, you know, which get sort of dismissively referred to as trafficking. So what Niger has done, which has been quite sensible, is to kind of distinguish between types of trafficking that can be managed in such a way as to contain violence. And this creates other forms of risk for the Nigerian state. It's not a safe solution, but at a time when violent conflict is spreading so fast across the Sahel and with such terrifying speed and depth, it's a move that has enabled northern Niger to remain relatively stable.
One success story is in Agadez, where the state integrated disaffected Tuareg elites. Can you tell me a little bit more details about how that worked?
So when looking at migration, over the past decade, the numbers of migrants passing through Agadez, you know, which is its regional hub, has really surged. One of the interesting things of the industry of migrant transport is that it wasn't just a sort of anarchic, you know, it wasn't practiced the way that we sort of see it in Libya, you know, where there's slave markets. And in Agadez, there was a degree of regulation. There were military escorts. You had papers stamped by the state. So this industry faced a major disruption in 2015 when the state criminalized migration at a time when the European Union was dealing with what was for it a major crisis of migrant and refugee arrivals. In Agadez, you know, the transport of migrants not only was not a crisis, but had actually become a major economic lifeline. Criminalizing this semi-regulated industry and going after it had a huge destabilizing effect on the economy of the Agadez region.
That was Hannah Armstrong, Sahel expert for the International Crisis Group. She was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Dakar, Senegal. That is it for this Tuesday, January 7th edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again tomorrow for more Africa news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty, and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Jamie Cook. I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very, very good day.
The 62nd annual Grammy Awards show is coming up. To celebrate, Border Crossings will play songs from the winners of the 2019 American Music Awards to refresh you on some of last year's best tracks. Tune in to hear from your favorite artists like Post Malone, BTS, and Taylor Swift, January 23rd on The Voice of America.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. VOA. On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.